All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council meeting for Thursday, June 11th, 2020. Ms. Hoffman, can you please call roll?
Mayor Dewey.
Here.
Councilmember Devlin.
Here.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Here.
Councilmember Vick.
Here.
And Councilmember Michelson.
Here.
All right, if you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. One quick note of housekeeping. We realized at the last meeting we had issues with our live stream, and we hope that we have most of those issues resolved with a dedicated internet connection and a couple of other modifications. We often hear complaints about the noise cutting out in our live stream, and we've determined that part of that is because we aren't always loud enough when we speak in this room, and because of the distance of the camera and where the microphone sits, it doesn't always pick us up. So it is extremely important that we all use the microphone system when we speak, and speak as close to it as so you're as pretty much as loud as I am speaking now. That way it'll ensure that the microphone for the live stream picks up everything. If we see issues with the live stream, we'll continue to try to troubleshoot those. But being off-site from Town Hall, it's obviously given us some changes in that system. With that, we'll open the floor for public comment, opportunity for citizens to comment on items not on tonight's agenda. Please step forward, state your name and address for the record, and please sign the sign-in sheet.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to suspend council rules to add some rules to public comment.
Okay. Is there a second to suspending council rules? You want to stipulate what the rules maybe are?
Time limit of 3 minutes and stay on topic.
Okay. So Mr. Vick has moved to limit public comment to 3 minutes, staying on topic. Is there a second to his motion?
I'll second.
Okay. Any further council discussion? All right, very well. I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Michelson?
No.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
No.
Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
I vote aye. With that, public comment is limited to 3 minutes. Mr. Gibson?
Steve Gibson, Stevensville, Montana. I'll try to beat two minutes.
It's not on. Sorry.
Steve Gibson. Is it on?
Yes,
it
sir.
It is now. Yes, sir.
Steve Gibson, Stevensville, Montana. I just have a question, I guess it would be for Monica. In the STAR, and I know last week, the council directed to bid out the IT contract for 2 weeks and 3 publications, but it wasn't in the STAR. So...
Yes, sir.
Is it going to be?
Mayor, should I answer that?
The RFP has not yet been sent out to the press. That will go out on Monday.
It will so be in next week.
It will be in next week's paper.
Thank you. Yes.
Any further public comment? Mr. Adams.
Mark Adams, 610 East 2nd Street. I have some comments directed towards Ms. Devlin. If you recall, you read an email or two at a public meeting, and those emails, of course, are public record as long as you file a request for information. Did you file a request for information?
Does council oppose Ms. Devlin making a comment? I just ask if you defer to council comments. Is that acceptable?
That's fine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any further public comment? Ms. Barker.
Good
Good evening, council members, Mr. Owens, staff, and mayor. I'm reading this letter to you all because I feel that not all the letters are getting read within submitted for correspondences. It seems that we pick and choose whose letters we are getting to read into the record. I would also like to hit on the live feed for the meeting that the public should be able to watch with, from Facebook. This always seems to go down where there's a lot of agenda items that need to be discussed or may even cause some friction between you, the mayor, and the council members. This is a public meeting and you are closing the public out and having it available to watch publicly. Better yet, you are closing the public out of the meetings by limiting the number of people to come into this room. The governor opened up to 50 people in a group and you are not allowing this to happen. You are taking my First Amendment rights away. Maybe you all didn't know what your First Amendment rights were, since it's no longer taught openly in our public schools. I know for a fact it has been suggested many times that we either hold them at the school or even a fire hall, which would better accommodate the public. This is a big word, public. You are closing out by limiting the number of people in this room. Social distancing is also a recommendation. It's not a law. It is not by you, the mayor, letting people know where the transparency is, as we as the people keep hearing this and always talk about. In the book, I don't think you even know what the definition is of transparency. In a business of the governance text, it is honesty and openness. It also means that the person can or does not hide or conceal anything. It means observers who want to know what this is, someone is up to. The observers are free to observe. A person who has no secrets tells no lies. This goes for all of you that are seated in front of me today in this public meeting tonight. This leads me into a couple of other things as a citizen that concerns me tremendously. The IT services are being paid by the taxpayers' dollars. You as the council gave direction back in February to stop this service. The representative at First Call told the mayor and the council she needs 30 days written notice to stop the services. Did you as the council follow up to make sure this happened? I don't see any signs of this, as of you even declining the claims. They keep coming up month after month, and the claims presented to you at the council meetings. When you all...
Okay, Ms. Barker, that's 3 minutes. Thank you.
That's bull crap.
Further public comment.
Close out the public.
Woohoo!
Okay, it's not time for... If we could please be quiet in the audience.
My name is Susan Baylor, and I live in Stephenville. I thought I'd become accustomed to some extent council members lying. However, I found myself genuinely appalled at a recent bold-faced lie by council member Holcomb after watching the May 21st, 2020 Board of Adjustments meeting regarding a variance request by property owner Dave Larson. My comments contained in this letter can be verified by watching the town's video recording of that meeting, or listening to the audio, both of which are available on the town's website for review and inspection. I am also including approximate times that events I referenced took place. Councilmember Holcomb, on the record and acting in her official capacity as a Board of Adjustment member, pronounced at this meeting that she had only had one email from Bob Michelson related to Mr. Larson's variance, but did not answer it. She said that her vote was based on her own impressions of the issue and what she had learned during the variance hearing. This can be heard at approximately 1 hour, 5 minutes, and 55 seconds into the meeting. Holcomb then voted aye, supporting approval of Mr. Larson's request. She took this action knowing full well that the request did not meet the town's laws and requirements in a number of ways, and also that it was against the town's consultants' advice, who had reviewed the request and recommended to the Board of Adjustments to deny the variance, providing solid reasons for the denial. Holcomb's blatant lie was exposed only seconds later from Councilmember Devlin read into the record several email correspondence between Holcomb, Michelson, and Larson. Councilmember Devlin explained the legal gravity of the behind-the-scenes interactions of Holcomb and Michelson, and further explained that by not disclosing these interactions, they had placed the town into a possible serious legal liability. Thus, at approximately 1 hour, 6 minutes, and 47 seconds into the meeting. It was then and only then that Holcomb withdrew her vote and admitted that she had been in communication with Mr. Larson for several months, which is totally different from than her statement at approximately 1 hour, 5 minutes, and 55 seconds. It was an out-and-out lie. She tried to justify the lie by saying Mr. Larson wasn't getting the assistance he needed from Town Hall. That's at approximately 1 hour, 8 seconds, 8 minutes, and 23 seconds into the meeting. This in itself is appalling for several reasons. Why did she feel the need to lie? What were her motives to lie? Was she involved in behind-the-scenes dealings
or not?
About a request that was obviously against our zoning codes? Why didn't she disclose her
Ms. Devlin, if I can stop you for a moment. I wrote down that her time ends at 11 minutes and 25 seconds of the recording.
Wow.
Ms. Barker, if we can't be respectful and retain our decorum, you'll be asked to leave the room. It's that simple. We have guidelines for how we do public comment. We need to abide by those guidelines. They're adopted by the council.
I just timed it. She stood right up there.
Oh, my God.
3 minutes.
Can we just let her finish? Because you're taking a long time.
Okay, shut up there.
Brennan,
this is not
fighting
me. We can cancel the meeting and
okay, here's the deal, folks.
And yelling at people at the podium is not okay either.
Turn your mic on, please. If we can't be respectful and we can't retain our decorum, then we just won't have the meeting. It's that simple. Okay? We'll adjourn. The alternative is, if this bothers you so much, you're welcome to leave. Or I can ask the chief to have you leave. Okay? We provide you with an opportunity to come and voice your opinions to us. The council has chosen to limit that to 3 minutes tonight. I'm watching the recording. I'm watching the times. And she has time left. Okay?
How much?
Well, now I don't know because the recording's been run off. So,
just have her sit down.
Can she? That's.
It's been in the
Miss, she's going
no,
on.
We're done speaking from the back of the room. If you need to say anything else, you can speak at the podium under the time that's allotted for you. Otherwise, I don't want to hear anything, okay? It's that simple. Okay? If you're going to be disorderly, you're going to leave. Ms. Devlin, I give you another 30 seconds.
Thank you. What else is going on behind the scenes that we don't know about but should? People in Stevensville, whether you live within the town's limits or in the 59870 zip code, we have been quiet way too long and need to hold our elected officials and appointed representatives accountable for their actions. Lying on the record and supporting projects that are against the town's very own rules should not and cannot be tolerated. I urge everyone to start asking
Devlin,
questions.
That's your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for your politeness.
Okay, who's next for public comment?
I'm here to finish Stacy's remarks. You might want to do that with somebody else, too.
Are you really going to allow this to
continue? Ms. Rodabaugh, please just address the council with your comments.
When are we going to start the time?
You started
now.
A few seconds ago.
Now. Did you as a council follow up to make sure this happened? I don't see any signs of you not declining these claims. They keep coming month after month on the claims presented to you at council meetings. When are we going to hold certain people accountable for their actions? This is my tax dollars and the citizens of Stevensville being spent on high dollar services not needed for a small town. I have yet to see any advertising in any of the papers either, as this was directed by you, the council, to have it advertised in 3 papers, I didn't believe. The mayor and the clerk again have overrode you all as a council. that has again given a directive. So why do we have a town's lawyer if he does not keep the town accountable for the directives that have been stated by the council? Guess he has to have his own agenda for the town. Mr. Lowens, I believe you have your own agenda of what your job is for the town of Stephensville. I have not seen you represent the town of Stephensville other than rack in a monthly paycheck that is way out of line. You were advertised by the council some time ago that you were not needed at every meeting. You are a puppet on a string that only listens to the mayor. Did you forget who you work for? You work for the set of people of Stephensville and what concerns they may have. Again, this is always a different agenda. You should be looking into the proposed projects that the townspeople are not getting a say in, but we just keep moving things forward. Many things have slipped by the line sitting in those chairs. The last item I would like to discuss again is Burt Thorpe low-income housing project, formerly known as Nicole Court Housing Project, that will house 16 units. I spoke with Jamie Devlin after last town council meeting and voiced my concerns about this project. She told me that she is concerned, too, with the impacts that this will have on the surrounding houses. Sorry, council member Jamie Devlin, I guess you don't have a say in this project, even though you represent Ward 1. Guess that we only have one person that has say in the project is our zoning administrator, Mr. Dewey. It's sad that public has not been seen this coming forward for the public to see the plans. Yet when asked, we have no right to see the plans for the future development. Where does I and team play out here in this project picture? Good question to be asked by many of us.
All right, Ms. Rodaba, that
I'll just give this to somebody else to read.
That's fine. Move. Okay. Your time has expired on the podium. Thank you.
Who wants to read the rest of it? Anybody?
Is there any more public comment?
This is where I ended up.
Ms. Tadvik.
No idea.
Brandon, are we really going to do this?
Last warning, Ms. Rodaba.
Leslie Tadvik, 509 Mission Street, Stephensville, Montana. To the mayor and council members, it is now budget time, and I am recommending to the mayor and council it is time to be fiscally conservative and responsible. We are in the start of a recession and will not see the worst of it for another 5 or 6 months at least. I highly recommend to freeze all salaries, or at best, just cost of living raises. Also to freeze all hiring unless it is to replace a current employee. A number of our residents have been laid off. We have a number of retired people living here on fixed incomes. It would be fiscally irresponsible to do any increases in salaries, hiring for new positions, or make any additions or remodeling. I know one business in the valley that has over 120 employees. And in March, all the employees were told that there would be no raises for 2020, or at least until the outcome of the recession is clear. The Social Security Administration cost of living adjustment for 2020 is 1.6%. I was also talking with an accountant this afternoon, and he stated that a number of businesses froze salaries, and some have cut salaries 15%. Across the board. I urge the council to be fiscally responsible. And this is from my husband, Jim Tadvik, 509 Mission Street, Stephensville, Montana. Do I still have time left?
You do.
Well, go ahead and read it. Just come on up and read it.
Oh, thank you.
Can you state my name?
Yes, please, and your address.
Sherry Deach, 105 Winslet Avenue. I'm going to finish reading Stacy's statement.
There's a public hearing set for June 17th at 6:30 right here in the library. Why are you even holding this meeting if you have told the council already that this will only be for comments? However, this project is moving forward. There is another override by the mayor. You as the council or the planning or zoning board never had a chance to weigh in on this project. This is huge and makes a big impact on the town of Stevensville and the residents who live in the area, and I'm one of those. I have come before you, the council, mayor, and staff, and pleaded with you all how it will affect the residents who live close to this coming project. It's sad to say that I do foresee future lawsuits that will come forth to the town of Stevensville, and as we all know, we are not a high-income tax-based community that can afford these lawsuits. Sincerely, Stacy Barker. So my own personal comments, 3 minutes, already a reduced number of people even attending. We are the people that vote the council and the mayor into office, and yet we're restricted to 3 minutes in an already reduced setting. Cut off, in some cases, immediately, in other cases, not immediately, not to these people's fault, but apparently there's, I don't know, someone didn't set a timer or whatever, and then scolded when someone brings up a concern. I just want you guys to remember that we are the people that voted you in. We are the people. We should have comment. We should have more than 3 minutes. I think 5 maybe would have been a little bit better, but you're, again, in a reduced setting. You've got fewer people here, and people want to be able to comment. I think that we need to definitely improve on communication in this town so that we do have things available on either social media or some other way. I don't read the little newspaper. We're online. So having more than one avenue of communication, I think, would be appropriate so that more people are aware when these types of meetings are going on or other topics that people need to be aware of. So that's my comment.
Is there any further public comment?
Jerry Lackey, 517 South Sunset Bench, Stevensville. I'm just kind of going off of what these people are saying. I don't come to meetings very often, but I don't know if most of the people in this room realize that this is a public building. My name's on the outside of this building. My name is Public. You have no right to lock the door, shut the door, make people stand on the sidewalk, or do this. You have no right. This is a public building. I don't know who put the sign on the door that says it's mandatory to wear a mask to go in my library, but I didn't give you permission to put a sign on the door that says I need a mask to go into my library. Public building, you have no right. Y'all need to stop social distancing.
Further public comment? All right. With that, we'll move on to the rest of our agenda. We have, first up, the approval, there are no minutes tonight because of the turnaround time for the packet. You'll have sets of minutes to approve on your June 25th agenda. So you have approval of biweekly claims before you tonight. While the agenda states 15988 through 16028, Mr. Underwood did send you updated claims, and those claim numbers are 15988 through 16035.
I'll make the motion to approve the claims.
Is there a second?
I second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Mr. Michelson to approve the claims. Comment from council? Public comment on the claims. All right, with that, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
No.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
No.
And their votes aye. Claims are passed. Administrative reports. We do not have we do have an airport manager's report for you that's included in your packet. However, yesterday I received Ms. Coleman Assad's resignation. She is moving on to other things. And so with that, and on an interim basis, because we are elbow deep in a construction project at the airport, Mr. Underwood has been appointed to interim fill that position until the vacancy is permanently filled. Otherwise, the airport report is in your packet. Building department report is also in your packet for your review. Robert, do you have a finance report to review?
Nothing in the packet right now, but I do got a couple quick updates. The special audit, I've been working with Jennifer Cody. She was out for a while for the COVID and with the stuff she had personally. She's just finishing that up, and I talked to her today, and she's going to be coming forward with some recommendations. She's also worked with the auditors of the past and the ones who are auditing us right now to make sure all of her work documents go to the auditors so that they can have a clear picture of where we're at and finish her out a lot quicker because she's done a lot of work on our books. So that's any questions?
Any questions for Mr. Underwood? Excuse me. Okay, with that, we'll move on. Fire Department report. Chief Motley?
The statistical report is in the packet. You guys have seen that. Other than the stats, there's business as usual. Continue to respond to calls. Medical calls is mainly what we went to, as you can see from our stats. Other than that, just keep it on. We're trying to keep things put together. So, any questions?
Thank you, Chief. Parks and Recreation. Bobby.
Greetings, and it's a pleasure to meet you all. My name is Bobby Sunstein. I'm extremely excited to be the new Parks and Recreation Director for the town of Stevensville. A little bit about me. My wife and I moved here about 3 years ago from Bozeman, Montana. I'm originally from Lake Stevens, Washington, but I have been in Montana for about 7 years now. I'm a member of the National Recreation and Park Association, and I'm in the process of becoming a certified park and recreation professional. I'm driven, I'm passionate, and I'm eager, and I can't express that enough to serve this community of Stevensville and help facilitate community events and programs that promote a happy and healthy lifestyle for everyone around here. A little bit of updates. Here's what's happening in your parks. With phase two of Governor Bullock's reopening plan, we are working to open the pool, parks, public restrooms, and other recreation areas. Some new things, the town website has been updated for parks and recreation. There's now a parks and trails menu button, as well as a recreation that highlights the refuge, the golf course, and Fort Owen State Park. And then all the parks and trails are updated with new photos, driving directions, and amenities for each park, so it's very easy to access all the parks in town. I started on the City Pool tab. We have a projected season of June 22nd through August 29th this summer. We're currently working on some projects with the pool, painting it, filling some cracks. There's a little bit of concrete work with one of the rails, and we're currently starting on the inside to get that ready to go, hopefully by the 22nd. That is weather depending. With some of the projects. We currently have 3 returning lifeguards from last year. We have 2 new hire lifeguards currently, 2 water aerobic instructors returning, and then we have 1 interview scheduled for another lifeguard. Down at Lewis and Clark Park, there's new sidewalks for the bathrooms, and the bathrooms are now open. And then per Governor Bullock's reopening plan, we're sanitizing the playgrounds at Lewis and Clark, as well as Father River Valley, and the bathrooms down at Lewis and Clark 3 times a day, just to do our best part to keep everyone safe. We've removed graffiti from the state parks and from the playgrounds. And then River Park Trail, there is a bear in the area, so we've posted warning signs for that. And we've also cleared out the grassy area around the pavilion and picnic tables, so that's a very usable, nice space now. And then just for the future, I am excited to work with the Park Board, Civic Club, and the rest of the community of Stevensville. Some things looking ahead is like Park RX is combining local healthcare agencies with parks in our area, so the doctor literally prescribes you to go take a walk as part of your rehabilitation for whatever that may be. Working with the president of Whitetail Golf Course to facilitate cross-country skiing this winter, youth camps, things of that nature. And then throughout the summer, there's no sports really due to COVID, so the kids are going to have a lot of free time. So we're really excited about promoting, you know, wellness days, arts in the parks, things to promote getting the kids outside, staying healthy, staying active. So once again, nice to meet you all, and I'm Bobby Sunstein.
Are there any questions from the council? Okay, Chief Marble.
Okay, so the stats are up on the board there. And as you can see, we've been fairly busy. We do have our newest hire scheduled to be completing the academy at the end of the month. Unfortunately, because of the restrictions, for the first time ever, we can't attend the graduation. I feel a certain way about that, but I'm going to leave that alone. Anyway, so he is going to be graduating soon, which is great. We'll have him back, finish out his field training, and then he'll be ready to go regularly on night shift. We have decommissioned two of the police vehicles. They're ready to be auctioned in whatever manner is determined that we're going to auction them. And I'm not sure exactly when that's going to happen, but as soon as I know, I'll let y'all know how that goes. And other than that, I don't have anything else. Any questions?
Thank you, Chief. Public Works, Mr. Thomas.
So, April, we hired a new person, Dustin Triving. He is a current wastewater operator. He came from California with all the certificates, but only one has been reconciliation from our state. We've been taking tests for the other ones. First week of May, we did our leak locates. We found up to 50 possible leaks. And the guy that did the leaking testing said that it's possibly because of the last earthquake we had that a lot of those got started. The one that we did at 302 6th Street, they said as soon as that earthquake hit, they had noise. So that's possibly what happened there. We got it fixed right away. And last week, the other day, we had another water leak. We got that one fixed right away. We've installed some of the water meters and meter pits. We weren't able to go into any of the homes yet, but we can start that up. Back to those, I'm not going to do anything to meters until we get the pool up and going, because it's going to take quite a bit of work this year. We did our spring cleanup of the yard waste. We put in a dry well down at behind the parking lot there on 3rd and Gart. And due to the fact that the hardware store was doing some paving, we got them to pave in right around it, so it helps with the water. The Rocky Mountain contractors, when they bored over here on 1st Street, they went up 40 feet of service line for sewer. So the daycare place was out of sewer for a week. They brought in a porta potty for the kids to use, and we got that fixed with the Rocky Mountain contractors. Two graves and three urns last month. We got the sod laid down before Memorial Day. Took out the 5 dead trees on Main Street, planted 5 new trees on Main Street. And we've done the concrete work for the bathrooms. And we had a fella over in Father Valley Park that said if we would pour concrete, he would put in a bench. That's been done. And work on the pool. That's it.
Any questions? Mr. Yes, Michelson.
The week the other night, where was that at?
That was on Pine Street. Pine Street. But then the last 2 years has been real famous for leaks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it a bad one? I mean,
it was blown completely off the main, and we kind of flooded some yards, gave them some free water for watering their grass, about 4 yards. That was fixed.
Okay. All right, thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
All right. With that, we don't have any guests to recognize tonight, and don't have any correspondence to read either. There are no public hearings scheduled, so we're moving to unfinished business, discussion decision, on resolution number 470, annexing a tract of land located in section 35, township 9 north, range 20 west, which is 26.06 acres, identified on certificate survey 691110-R, tract 1B. Ms. Devlin was the only one that emailed me questions specifically on this item before you tonight, and I've made a copy for each one. I'll go ahead and pass those down for you, Jim. And I believe Mr. Vick also asked me a question. I think we addressed that as well. But Ms. Devlin's two questions on this item, in order to move forward with annexation, was what precautions will be put into effect to make sure Stevensville's water does not become contaminated. And her other question was what steps will be used to protect the wetlands slash pond. Those questions were sent over to John Kellogg and Mr. Reeves for answering. And I'll go ahead and read their responses for the audience's benefit, and also to give a chance for the council to review it as well. To question number one, their answer was, there are a number of existing protections for the town's wells. First of all, surrounding each of the wells is a 100-foot well isolation zone. And within those zones, there can be no activity that could potentially contaminate the wells. These well isolation zones all lie within the town's ownership. Secondly, the wells are over 400 feet deep and pass through numerous strata. For further protection, the state of Montana regulates activities that could contaminate groundwater, such as auto wrecking yards and gravel extraction. None of these activities are proposed, and the town could further prevent them from occurring in the future by approving Reeves' request for annexation and zoning. Please note that Jesse Reeves is not working a gravel pit on the property. The topsoil stored on the site was from a previous owner and was likely stripped on the property. Stripped material from road building next door in Twin Creeks. Therefore, by far the best protection for the town's water supply is to annex the property and zone it C2. This will enable the Reeves to connect to the town's water and sewer, eliminating the need for another septic system, and give the town some control over future use of the property. To question number two, Ms. Devlin asked what steps will be used to protect the wetlands and pond. Jesse and Rebecca intend to maintain protection around the pond as an asset to their property. The certificate of water right to the pond, copy attached, indicates that the purpose of the pond water is for fish and wildlife protection. The attachment unfortunately didn't print when I printed this out, but I can verify the water right abstract was sent to us. So with that, there was still, I think, some hesitation in the last time that this was considered by council in terms of the zoning. I think that we've narrowed it down really to two options. You can annex it either whatever zone you deem you want to annex it. Mind you that the Planning and Zoning Board, which Mr. Michelson serves as a liaison to, approved or recommended the C2 zoning. But you can do a C2 zoning with conditions. You can do R1, R2, whatever combination of zoning you'd like to do with whatever conditions on that property until a perhaps more concise zone is available for that zoning. So with that, I'll leave it to council to determine how you'd like to proceed. Mr. Michelson.
Mayor Dewey, the reason I didn't send any answers is because my position still stands from last week.
Mr. Michelson, I'm going to politely ask if you wouldn't mind speaking into the microphone. And if you need to move the microphone close to you or to the edge of the table, please feel free to do so.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you loud and clear. Thank you, sir.
The reason I didn't submit any questions, Mayor Dewey, is because my position still stands from last week. I reviewed the whole thing going back to last year, and even last year, the council had asked our town attorney to drop a contract, and that wasn't done. In March, we had asked him to continue to draw a contract in 30 days. Still wasn't done. And, of course, last week, he told Ms. Devlin that his verbal opinion was his written contract. The reason I think a contract is so important is that I did my research and I can't find anywhere where annexation happened without any written anything. It's not fiscally, it's not even sensibly correct to do an annexation just on a word of faith. That, and don't get me wrong, I believe your sincerity, but when you say that you're not going to, you're going to maintain protection around the pond as an asset, blah, blah, there's nothing in writing, what's to stop you down the road? You say you've got to protect the wetlands and the isolation and all that. That all sounds good here, but if there's nothing to back it up in writing, then I don't think we should move forward. Another opinion of mine is, what precedent does this set? If we annex one property owner in, and I granted, I know we have wells out there, we have wetlands, down the road, some other landowner that's close to town wants to annex in to hook up to our water and sewer. Because that's what it really is. He wants the water and sewer. And that's fine. I get that. Because he can't drill a well. If he drilled a well, he wouldn't be here. He wouldn't be talking to us. So if he can't drill a well, what makes you think down the road that we can drill a well? We don't have the water rights. He can't get the water rights. That's a big issue with the state of Montana. So just giving an annexation to one property owner because he wants to hook up to our water and sewer, I think sets a bad precedence down the road on other people. And it could be a lawsuit if somebody else that's close to town wants to hook up to water and sewer. We say no. All they're going to say is, hey, you did it to them. So moving forward, I just don't think at this time it's a good idea. We could work out an easement. That's what this originally started at, was just an easement. No annexation. And in March, it shipped into annexation out of nowhere. Now, here we are now. Thank you.
To clarify why this came up as an annexation, you're correct in that the easement had nothing to do with the annexation originally. However, it was the town's original intent to use, when the town council used the right of first refusal, our intent as leverage with the Reeves was in order to, we knew they wanted annexed in for the water and sewer services. We wanted to leverage an easement for annexation. So they would give us an easement, and in return, they would get water and sewer services through annexation. It's a requirement of water and sewer services. You can't have water and sewer without being annexed in. So the easement is now a separate issue. We've moved past that, where a contract is no longer a condition, or an easement is no longer a condition of annexation. It doesn't mean that an easement can't come up down the road once we know what that easement might look like. But I think to speak to your questions as to, you know, what's to prevent the Reeves from doing activity that contaminates our water or puts the pond in jeopardy, those answers are before you tonight, and that it is written in regulation that there are isolation zones around our wells, which are all contained on current town property. And further, the water right allocated to the pond protects that pond from any disturbance. So those regulatory documents, which are a water right and a regulation on well fields, and our property boundary, protect the assets that the town is currently interested in. I can't speak to what the required water rights would be for future town wells, because municipal water is considered differently than just a private landowner trying to put a well into a property. Our water rights attorney would be best suited to answer that question.
Mayor Dewey?
Yes.
May I ask you where you found that, where a town has to be annexed for an easement?
It's in our municipal, has nothing to do with the easement, Mr. Michelson. It's in our municipal code that requires if you want water and sewer services, you have to be annexed into the city.
I couldn't find that.
It'd be under our utilities code. And it's not uncommon practice. If you want our services, you pay our taxes. That's typical of most communities across the state, unless you're in a water or sewer district of some kind. Mr. Beck.
I guess the only question I got, because might surprise some folks, but I did do my homework, is that, then how come 6 months ago you recommended to annex and zone it as C2?
Yes, that's correct. But at the time, we did do our homework to look at all the water rights and everything. And the only thing that was off the ball.
Okay. Any further direction from council on the matter? The administration maintains to recommend annexation at whatever zoning is. Of course, we would recommend zoning at C2 based on the Planning and Zoning Board's recommendation. However, remember that zoning is up to the council's behest.
Will there be a public comment?
As soon as the motion's on the floor.
Would R1 allow for the type of business that he's wanting to run out of there? Since he really doesn't do an on-site work?
He would be able to maintain a home office, of course, and a home-based business, but we'd have to more concisely look at the activity he's proposing and compare that to what's allowed as far as storage and equipment and that sort of thing. So I guess from the town's perspective, Mr. Vick, you can zone it R1 and the annexation can go forward, and Mr. Reeves is then obligated to adhere to whatever zoning you zone it. It's noble of the council to try to accommodate whatever activity he wants to do on the property, but if you feel that an R1 zoning is most appropriate for that property, then that's, so be it. That's what it is. And if Mr. Reeves wants to come back to the town for some sort of a conditional use permit, then we could consider that at that time. Those are all options we consider through planning and zoning. So I would assume that water and sewer services, and I'm sure the Reeves can clarify if I'm incorrect, but my assumption is that the water and sewer services are very important to them in order to habitate the property, right? And so there may be a little bit of give and take in order to get those services on their part.
I'll make a motion to annex with an interim R1 that allows him to run his business on that property, and then we will look at C2 down the road.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to annex the property in question with an interim R1 allowing for his home-based construction business, and then reevaluating a C2 designation later. Does that accurately state the motion?
Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Michelson?
I don't believe we can allow a business into an R1, can we?
As I stated, we'd need to look more into the development. I think that if an R1 was going to fly and work, I'm stating if an R1 was going to work, I think that the Reeves family probably would have suggested an R1 zone in the first place and not even asked for a commercial zone. But I think that what they're trying to do doesn't fit in an R1 zone. But Mr. Vick is indicating in his motion that you would temporarily allow that use upon reevaluating a C2 zone on the property.
Or a more appropriate zoning.
Mm-hmm. Or a more appropriate zoning, which zoning reform is on the horizon for this community, and it sounds like a hybrid zone between R1 and C2 is necessary for the community, and so I think Mr. Vick is allowing time for that zone to be drafted, but not holding up the annexation any longer on that issue.
Right, and one thing I would like to see in this community, I've seen in other communities, is...
Can you use the microphone, please? We don't have enough stairs, so it must be outside.
One thing I'd like to see is in our future zoning code is to have like an R/C, and maybe eventually in the future an R/I, and C/I zoning code so that you can have multiple use on the same property rather than it just being limited to a home or limited to a storefront where you could have a your industrial business, kind of like what Selway used to have, but also be able to maintain a storefront in there as well.
Okay. Further council discussion? All right, I'll call for public comment. Mr. Gibson.
Steve Gibson, Stevensville. First of all, it was stated tonight by the mayor, it was in the paper. However, state law requires a town to annex property is going to apply to certain. That's not true. The statute is, and for your information, if you want to look it up under local government, Title 7, 713-4314. I'll just read the first line. Any person, firm, or corporation receiving water services outside of unincorporated city may be required. I've talked to legislators that are on local government. I've talked to an attorney. I've talked to a realtor. This happens in many other communities. And the reason it says may is state government doesn't mandate what local government does in many ways. There's a reason why it says may. Missoula's done it. Phillipsburg's done it. They did not annex because they didn't want to annex and it was up to the town council. But they let them hook up water and sewer. They paid for the water and sewer. And one of the reasons was they didn't want to do all these things that's now being talked about, maintain the road, all this other stuff. But it's not the state law, as this is in the paper, that says you have to do that. It's Maine. And this is like Groundhog Day. It has been 10 months. The Reeves, what was talked about, was an easement so they could hook up to water and sewer. And you can do that as a council. You do not need to annex it. You are setting precedent here to do this. Big time. And as far as the other comment about, I'm sorry, Councilman Vick, there are neighborhoods throughout this town that would never be allowed. You would have all kinds of lawsuits. You know, I understand what your point is. But I think what's most important here, this is mushroom so big that there's something really up here, and I don't know what it is. I was all in favor, and the council was in favor. You two are here. It was an easement. And let's talk about the wells. Again, last August, Mayor Dewey told me the town doesn't even have a legal permit for the wells that are there now from DEQ. He also stated that it might go to Water Court. The Reeves stated that they could not get a permit from DEQ to dig a well for their house. How in the heck is a town going to dig wells? Thank you.
Further public comment. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Marilyn Wolf. I live at 300 Aspen Trail, which is in Creekside Meadows. I want to say, how can you council members, as elected officials, approve annexing private land with a change of zoning? On the whole, additional city wells can be located on the Reeves property. Ask yourselves, is it feasible, or will there be a better location elsewhere for the new city wells? The city attorney has advised you to postpone any decision until a contract is in place. Heed legal advice. I feel sorry for Mr. Reeves. He was probably led to believe his request for city services was a shoo-in. Well, this issue is complicated now, and I urge you to decline the annexation until all information is known, particularly from the 2020 engineering report. Please don't obligate the citizens of this town to a handshake deal in hopes everyone will be happy down the road. Thank you.
Any further public comment?
In the past, the town has not annexed any project until all infrastructure is in place. They have told us one house, and they told us two houses. More than one house, you need streets, alleys, curbs, gutters, sidewalks. If you zone it commercial, how many other houses they're going to put in. They'll all be commercial too. So you don't know what kind of business they will have. So you need to really think about it.
Mr. Standard.
My name's Jeff Standard, and I've worked on the Reeves project a little bit, and I guess what comes to mind here, we're talking about sewer and water services, and you know, that the contract sewer and water has come up, you know, in Missoula, they do this all the time, where a parcel is outside of the city limits, it's in the wastewater area, and they contract with the city to have those services. That has not been suggested. It would definitely be a cleaner way to do things, seems to me. It's done, like Mr. Gibson said, all over Montana, as far as contract sewer goes. The reason, I mean, you know, there's water right issues with this parcel. There's also a septic issue with this parcel. And so, I mean, if the town basically rejects this parcel, you're looking at a parcel that's, you know, unbuildable. You know, maybe that's what the town wants. I don't know. But, you know, a town needs to have a way to, you know, bring in more tax revenue, things like that. You know, that's what, I mean, you know, not that it's all about the money, but I mean, you know, that's a driver here. It would seem like the town would win to annex this to me. I don't know. I'm not an attorney. You know, I don't espouse to be. There's a lot of water right things that go on with the parcel. You know, there's many parties that seem to have water rights to this parcel. And Jesse's not asking to do anything with those. He's basically asking to just connect to the city. And everybody, essentially all those water rights belong to other folks. I believe Jesse might have one water right on the parcel, but so it's a complicated matter, but I believe that annexation can be conditioned, you know, with certain limits, and the town can stipulate what those are. So, you know, otherwise he bought a parcel without being able to do anything on it. So, and I guess my question was, did our response to those questions did that satisfy the person who asked them?
Ms. Devlin?
Those were questions that were asked to me. So that was.
Thank you, Mr. Day.
I'm not saying that our local ordinance has a conflict with state law, because it's definitely building on what the state law says instead of saying may. It's restricting kind of what the law says. But is there any way we can suspend our ordinance to allow him to hook up to water and sewer while we further review C2 and easement?
I defer to legal counsel on that. Of course, she's not here. I guess, you know, you could, in theory, table this and you know, have that investigated. I think to George's question or points about, well, how many connections and all of those other things, Mr. Reeves is not submitting a subdivision application, and if he were to divide the property and place more residences on that, he would have to come forward, even if he's going to split it into two parcels, he's going to have to come forward for a minor subdivision review at some level. And so that is when infrastructure would be evaluated. You know, but right now it's just a very large 26-acre parcel. that's just asking for a single connection. So, you know, I hear a lot of comment about whether or not annexation should move forward, but I guess it's the town, you know, the part of the contract, or excuse me, the agreement for easement, a lot of the town's interest in this entire discussion has been to some degree, regulate what happens on that property. And you can't do that unless it's annexed in. That's really the bottom line. And, you know, if you decline annexation, then he still exists to be part of the county. He still has to follow the rules as far as the distance from our wells, which again, those required distances are already in our own property boundaries. And he has to, you know, follow the water rights issues around that pond. So, but I think, if we want to continue a conversation with Mr. Reeves about the possible use of that property, which we don't know what that use is until we see the 2020 PER, then, you know, that is what it is. Do you want to continue with public comment, or Mr. Michelson?
I'd like to reiterate what Mrs. Wolf said. I think it's just fiscally, not fiscally, but just, it's just not right to have to do an annexation of any kind without any type of anything in writing. Just to approve it here and put it into a resolution form, leave so many variables out.
Mr. Michelson, there is something in writing. The annexation plan for services outlines exactly how services are provided and what the limits are of those services.
I got that, the service agreement part.
Well, it's not necessarily a service agreement. It is a plan, it's the town's plan to provide services to the annexed parcel. So I don't know what you're expecting to have in writing in negotiating an annexation. I'm confused on that. What you're saying, we can't proceed with annexation without something in writing, but I'm not sure what it is you're looking for to be in writing.
Well, I stated it all last week, Mr. Dewey. We have no water rights. There should be something in writing as what he can or cannot do down the road.
That is in writing. It's in his water rights abstract.
No, I meant as far as businesses.
And I think Mr. Vick is clarifying that in his motion to what he's limited to do on that property.
I don't understand why we just can't do an easement without an annexation.
We're not talking about an easement. Because we don't know what that easement is. We don't know what it would be. Ms. Devlin?
If I remember correctly, and please somebody correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Owen said last week that a contract was not the best idea. We didn't really have anything to put into a contract. So, am I correct in that? I mean, that's very paraphrasing it down, but did I understand that correctly?
Correct. Mr. Owens was willing to bring a contract forward, but he didn't fully grasp from the council what you wanted in that contract because we don't have specific easement boundaries to place on the property, and we can't just place a blanket easement on someone's property corner to corner.
There's nothing to put in a contract.
Correct.
Okay.
He felt that whatever you did put into a contract would be flimsy.
Thank you. Right, and it wouldn't hold up.
Hold ground.
It's correct. Yes, exactly. He felt that it wouldn't hold ground if it were challenged in one way or another. And so a contract is not out of the question. He was not necessarily opposed to a contract, but he needed to disclose.
It's really hard to understand what you're saying and focus on what you're saying when people are whispering and talking in the audience.
I apologize. Let's please.
Thank you. It's ridiculous. It's enough.
Let's keep the voices out, please. To my point, Mr. Owens wasn't objecting necessarily to a contract. He didn't say that you couldn't do a contract, but he wanted to disclose to the council that he did not feel a contract would hold any ground if it escalated to the point where it was under a court. And so that, I think that was the basis for council's decision to not move forward with a contract.
Thank you for clarifying.
You're welcome. This council wanted to take more public comment. Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, just one more. It's just, even I think your last meeting, it said easement. I know it did in March, and now you're saying, well, it's not about an easement. It's been about an easement since November. And it was requested that the attorney, you, whoever, and get with George to work that out, whether it be future wells or the existing wells. That was never done. And I don't even think George was ever involved. And I just don't get it. And Councilman Vick, the May is very important. This, there's a development outside of Missoula that's outside the city limits. They asked to hook up the city water and sewer, and there was no annexation. And I've heard all this complicated stuff. This easements issue is not that complicated as was stated back in November. When the private party and the governing party agreed, it's not that complicated. I did two of them. They were a lot bigger than this. And it was pretty simple. Thank you.
Chief Marble.
Put my citizen hat on for a second, if I can, please. James Marble, 124 Heritage Street, Stevensville. So, I don't regularly agree with Mr. Gibson, but I do this time.
Chief, let's keep comment on topic, please.
I'm sorry. The fact of the matter is, I'm pretty sure, and correct me if I'm wrong, George, there are other properties in this town that have been connected to water and sewer that are not annexed. You know, and I kind of feel for him that he wants to try to move forward, and just, again, citizen hat on, I think you really should look at doing that, explore that as an option. So, my two cents.
Further public comment?
I want to retract my motion, to make another motion.
Ms. Devlin, do you concur or consent to his retraction?
That's fine.
Okay, Mr. Vick, go ahead.
I'll make a motion for right now to allow him to hook up a water and sewer. I understand what it supposedly says in our utility code, and I can look that up real quick. But I think for the what the original idea was with the agreements and everything that we discussed back in November, it's going to be best to allow him to hook up to water and sewer. And looking at his map and whatnot, it's not going to be really that much work to do that. I'm saying that, granted, it'd be George doing most of it, but
he's responsible to get the lines to our to our mains.
Right. Okay. But I would like to make a motion to allow him to hook up water and sewer while we continue to research zoning, contracts, easements, everything else.
Okay, Mr. Vick's motion is to allow water and sewer connections while researching further the annexation issue. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. It's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Holcomb to allow water and sewer connections, further research annexation. Council comments? Mr. Michelson?
So, Mr. Vick, so you want to allow them to hook up to water and sewer. No annexation at this time as we study further options as far as an easement. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Further council comment? Public comment? All right, we'll vote on it. Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes unanimously. All right, next item on the agenda, moving into new business, is discussion decision on the fire department's volunteer roster. The roster has been provided to you tonight in print. This is more or less an annual occurrence for the fire department. We'd like to bring the roster forward and make any revisions necessary as they occur. Are there any questions for the fire chief on the roster, or is someone willing to put forward a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the roster as written.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Holcomb, to approve the roster as presented. Council discussion.
I do want to make a a rider motion to go with that, to provide back pay to Assistant Chief Henderson, who has been acting in the capacity of Assistant Fire Chief for several months now, and has not been receiving an honorary for his services.
Do you have a date to which you'd like to pay to?
Do you have what date he took that?
First of April.
April 1.
Okay, motion on the floor by Mr. Vick is to back pay the Assistant Fire Chief to April 1st. Is there a second on the motion?
I'll second it.
Okay, so moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Holcomb. Council discussion on the secondary motion. Mr. Michelson?
Wouldn't this be something that we should be, this wasn't an honorarium that was put in the last year's budget, was it?
It was. We budget for an Assistant Fire Chief.
Oh, honorary. I did not know that. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question. Is there any further council comment? Any public comment on the secondary motion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the vote on that motion. Mr. Michelson?
Aye.
Ms. Holcomb?
Aye.
Ms. Devlin?
Aye.
Mr. Dick?
Aye.
All right, motion on the floor is to approve the roster. Any further discussion from council? Any public comment from the audience? Chief, any remarks?
Yeah, you'll notice on your roster, there's 20 active members now on the town roster. 28 active members constitutes a company, so we're getting closer to getting back to having a full company again, which is really good. You'll also notice down at the bottom we have a new recruit and a candidate, Corey Mertens and then Blake Henderson also. So great additions to the department, very eager and active, and thank you for approving the roster.
Thank you. Any further public comment? Okay. Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Next item of business is discussion decision on creating a permanent Parks and Recreation Director position and authorizing compensation. The concept of a Parks and Recreation Director was first broached in our joint council and staff workshop where we did some strategic planning back in January of 2020. And at that time, we received great enthusiasm from the council and from the staff in support of the position. So that was kind of on the books to present and implement here within the new budget cycle for fiscal year ending 2021. With COVID-19, that changed, drastically changed how we handle park services for this community. We have playground equipment, a swimming pool, and public restrooms that all needed to be modified in terms of how we provide those services to our community in order to comply with Governor Bullock's orders. We had spending authority and had a vacancy in the pool manager's position. And so under Ordinance 166 and with that funding, we transitioned from a pool manager to a seasonal Parks and Recreation Director to manage the necessary pieces to comply with COVID-19's restrictions on the community. So, currently we do have the ability to retain a seasonal Parks and Recreation Director. However, in a strategic planning, we discussed making that position permanent year round, so that they could spend the winter time developing parks programming for the community and doing some master planning and that sort of thing with the park board, and then implementing those pieces throughout the summer. So in light of COVID-19, we moved forward and hired that position, as has been explained in the memo to council back in May. And that's when we hired Mr. Sunstein to take over in that role. He's done a wonderful job so far. As we discussed in our budget meeting on Tuesday, we are budgeting to maintain the position into the new fiscal year at a reasonable wage for the level of responsibility that person's expected to take on. And our intent is to offset that program with program revenue generated. We do anticipate that we will see offset of the expenses that we are incurring today from CARES Act funding that was made available to us last week. Mr. Underwood's building that application and will be submitting it tomorrow with every COVID-19 related expense that the town has incurred and the guidance that we've received from the state and from the League of Cities and Towns is that if you submit a receipt, you should expect a check and a deposit for the receipts you turn in for. So we will include a large portion of the Parks and Recreations Director's wages to date in that request, because a large portion of his time so far has been spent on making sure the town is compliant, or that at least that department is compliant with the governor's directives in terms of social distancing and sanitation. And that level of supervision will be required throughout the summer as the swimming pool stays open and we handle that season, and then into the fall as we do youth sports activities and the like. It's been extremely useful to have that position filled, especially as of late, because we've had several event permits come forward that request use of the park, and he's able to facilitate the processing of those permits and make sure that the services are provided for those permittees. I think I could probably go on and on and on about the benefits of having the year-round permanent position. But I think what I'll do is just make the administration's recommendation and give you a chance to ask any questions. The administration, of course, is recommending creating a permanent Parks and Recreation, or authorizing a permanent Parks and Recreation Director position full-time year-round at a wage of $17 an hour.
I'll make a motion to approve agenda item 11B.
I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved by Mr. Vick and seconded by Ms. Devlin to approve agenda item 11B.
Quick question.
Sure.
Here on the agenda, it says permanent, but this position is seasonal, correct? It's not a year-round position, right?
The current status of the position prior to whatever action you take tonight is seasonal. So it would expire shortly after Labor Day is typically when we lay off summer seasonal help. We're proposing that this position maintain year-round.
What would be winter duties of Parks and Rec Director?
Winter duties of this individual, we envision that they are going to largely coordinate and have ready the summer programming schedule and work over the winter to make sure that programming is ready to roll out early in the spring, as well as working with the park board. I don't know how many years park board members may be able to attest. We've talked about a master plan, and so we'd like that individual to assist in making that master plan come to fruition with the park board. And then, you know, whatever other clerical duties. Of course, I think that Mr. Sunstang envisions some winter programming as well. As he's mentioned, some cross-country skiing programming and some other winter-oriented programs in addition to what we expect to bring out in the summer for our youth and adults.
And just one more question. I'm guessing that this kind of relieves a lot of duties that are kind of like the mayor or Monica, Robert, and even George is having to do rolled into one as far as maintaining the parks and whatnot, correct?
That's correct. Currently, the Parks and Recreation Department is informal, or has been, and so, you know, George, of course, takes care of the maintenance, Robert takes care of the financial pieces. Can I have another mic, please? I think that battery died. Ooh, that light's more green than the other one. Good. Robert, of course, takes care of the financial pieces and some of the budgeting. Monica's been handling permitting, and then, of course, the overall directions largely come from me. In addition to that team of people, we usually, every summer, regardless, have someone managing the swimming pool. And we've seen success in, of course, having an adult with some sort of management background in managing that and taking care of that program. And I think in the current climate, that's probably more important than ever, given the sanitation standards we're expected to attain. Mr. Michelson?
I have a couple questions here, Mayor Dewey. When did Bobby come aboard?
His first day was June 1st.
June 1st. May I ask why you hired him before you brought him before the council tonight? Is that a standard practice for the town? I don't believe that is, sir.
As I stated earlier, the ordinance you adopted, number 166, which was an emergency ordinance addressing COVID-19 and the public health emergency, authorized the administration to move forward with hiring any staff necessary to comply with whatever directives came forth. You received a memo stating that we were going to move forward and with advertising and hiring the position. In an effort to keep you informed as to what the activities of the administration were. That recruitment took longer than we anticipated, but we were fortunate to see a candidate come forward. And as soon as we were able to, we got that person to work so that we could get our playgrounds and public restrooms and other facilities up and running under the COVID-19 guidance. So he spent almost all of his time, other than orientation, making sure that we're adhering to the state's guidance.
And it also says that he's a department head, correct?
That is correct.
So he answers directly to you?
That's correct.
So if there's a park question or anything and George has anything, then George has no authority over him as far as parks, correct?
They work collaboratively on parks maintenance. But parks programming is independently run by the Parks and Recreation Director. So currently, park maintenance is still a function of Public Works. And I guess I would say over the last week and a half, they've worked together very well to coordinate park maintenance functions and make sure that those things are taken care of.
And also, I guess I have kind of an issue, Mayor Dewey, as far as the short-term funding available from CARES and the FEMA. I've been keeping a real close eye on all that, and that funding isn't a guarantee for us. Putting in a grant and then saying it's going to come through, in my estimation, is like buying a car and then saying, well, I'm going to pay for it when I get a job. It's not a guarantee. And I know you say it here that modest fees through collected for services and existing revenues generated for parks. I can't see existing fees for events and all that other stuff being generated for his wages for full time. I would be in support of a part-time seasonal position, and if the CARES grant does not come through, then I feel that maybe he should be laid off. I think it sets a bad precedent, as Ms. Tadic said. This whole country is hurting for jobs right now, and I guarantee giving a job to anybody right now is a plus. Municipalities and towns, within 6 to 8 months, we're all going to be hurting. And I know when that comes, there's going to be massive layoffs. There's no denying it. So I'd be in favor of a seasonal job, but I couldn't support a full-time job in this position right now. Thank you.
Just real quickly to address the CARES Act funding and the FEMA funding. The administration is budgeting for the worst case scenario in terms we've budgeted to maintain the position without COVID-19 or CARES Act funding coming to the town. I mentioned that those funds may come to us more as a footnote or as an aside so that you're aware that there may be an offset in the savings to the town. But we are not depending on those funds from CARES or from FEMA to absolutely offset the expenses of those positions. We're budgeting, of course, business as usual. In terms of fees, we're not suggesting that we raise or that any of our current fees would sustain the wages for this position. We acknowledge that. We don't receive that much funding in event permits or anything like that. It's more or less, you know, around $1,000 annually. What we're suggesting is that the current operations of parks today, with the exception of swimming pool, the only contribution that the park system gets outside of tax dollars is swimming pool fees today. Okay, we're suggesting that if the position became permanent and we were able to implement summer programming and after school programming and even some winter programming, that of course a fee would be charged for those programs. You would charge an individual or say you would charge a family to participate in a day camp for a week. And we've looked at programs from other municipalities across the state who are implementing programming and have those things, and they're doing so successfully. And those fees are based on the expenses of the program. So we don't generate a profit off those fees. We keep the fees so that they only cover the expenses of the program. And in this case, the only expenses are wages. Our parks maintenance is already covered by taxes, and taxes are also subsidizing swimming pool operations in a small amount as well. Excuse me. Ms. Devlin?
There's been studies that have been done actually recently on mental health in youth, and the youth range from, in the particular studies that I've read, range from elementary through high school. It's fairly new. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but partnering our youth with physical activity, as well as park and rec programs activities, they're finding a huge reduction in mental health issues with the youth. I think my personal opinion, we're missing the boat here. We do have a lot of students. The school's expanding, which I feel is going to bring a lot more youth. They're always looking for something positive to do, and I think this is a really great way that we can bring in some revenue, but also help the future generations that we complain about all the time. It's a way to give back to them and help ensure that they have some outlet to become more of a healthy part of society.
Mr. Michelson?
Mr. Mayor, at the budget meeting Tuesday night, we got this pay matrix. And if this, what is the pay that Bobby's, if we approve this tonight?
We're recommending $17 an hour.
Okay, I got that. According to the pay matrix, the entry level for the Parks and Recreation Director, $17. If the council approves this matrix, I'm assuming with his college degrees and everything, he's going to either go to midpoint or maximum level. The midpoint is $21.25. The maximum is $25.50. So you might want to keep that in mind too. Thank you.
We're recommending a starting wage at $17 an hour. Mr. Sunsang is just entering the labor force with his degree. He just graduated last year.
2019.
So we feel that the entry level wage is appropriate for Mr. Sunsang's experience and the qualifications he brings to the organization. I'd like to remind you, when we discuss the salaries and wages matrix that we're proposing, he wouldn't adjust on that scale going forward. If you approve a wage of $17 an hour, he's stuck at 17 with the exception of any annual increases the council authorizes. We don't move him up into a midpoint or maximum scale. Those scales are only used if he were to vacate the position and we were to hire someone else. If we were to hire someone else with 6 or 7 years in parks and recreation background and certifications, then we may look at a midpoint or maximum salary. But we feel that administration feels that $17 an hour is fair for the qualifications he brings to the table, as well as it's a doable number for what we have available to budget. Our other department heads make considerably more, but they have also considerably more experience as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any further council comments? Okay, I'll call for public comment. Mr. Gibson.
Mayor, council, I'm not going to talk about the merits of this position. I totally agree with Councilperson Devon. I worked in youth services for 37 years. But the fact is still you're making this a seasonal or a part-time to a full-time position. And the point about the CARES grant, no government agency that I'm aware of would hire someone thinking they're going to get that grant. And to increase this to as an FTE, a full-time FTE, just like the executive branch needs legislative approval, you need council approval. And again, I'm not talking about this person being able to do the job. I agree with Ms. Devlin. But this is how you operate government. The next two are even more so, and I'll comment, those are two new FTEs. And it says in the agenda that you're going to get the CARE money. You don't know. You can't do that's not. It's not fair to hire somebody, and if you don't get the CARE money, to get rid of them, especially these next two FTEs. So again, I'm not here to dispute. This person's probably a great person. Your concept is probably great. I agree with Councilperson Devon. But this isn't how you do government. It needs approval. If I were to go to the legislature when I had 200 employees and a $23 million budget, we had to present our budget as the executive to the legislature. And if I were to come back in 2 years and said, oh, by the way, I went ahead and did two new FTEs, and you didn't give me the funding. They're FTEs, full-time employees, which this would be. That has to be approved by the governing body. Thank you.
Are we allowed to ask questions or just comments?
If you can just make comments at this time.
Okay. So I guess my only... You know, as you guys are talking about this, and, you know, I have a child that is kind of in that middle age range. You know, it does appeal to me to think about an after-school program that's led by Parks and Rec. It does appeal to me to have some type of a summer program that could be offered. If the fee is kept, like you said, not at a, you know, profit-making level, some type of revenue source for the town, but actually to service the town and the people that have children in this town that are already paying tax. You mentioned revenue, so I'm kind of getting two different things here. But one thing does come to mind is that if you do have a lot of children that want to participate in these programs, he can't be the only one running the whole show. So who then are we also going to have to hire in order to cover the additional children that are beyond the legal capacity for one person to govern over? I mean, that's, I think, something that is not brought up, is not thought about. It doesn't seem like there's been a whole lot of forethought in this decision making. And I, as a citizen, and, you know, in a town that we already financially, it's not like this is a wealthy town. You know, there are a lot of things that I think we could do better to focus on of care of this town instead of expansion of this and that and the other thing, if we're not going to really consider, you know, ahead of time the impact of those decisions and vetting the whole thing out and seeing, you know, if we have this scenario, if we have that scenario. And like they were saying, financially, you know, going into this with this, potentially we're going to get this money and then we'll cover it this way, or potentially we'll have these programs and then we'll cover it this way. That, I mean, financially, as a household, let alone a town or a city, to make decisions like that, I just don't think that that's wise. I think that you need to do a projection and look at, you know, how this will, number one, benefit the town. If we truly are aiming to benefit the people of this town with a program like that, you know, what type of staffing would have to be in place and what would the cost of that be and how would that actually impact the people of this town as well. So I think there's a lot to be considered before, you know, making a decision like that. And I think the people that
you know, we get into these positions should definitely be having a say before the decision is made, not one individual making that decision.
To just clarify on the CARES money and the budget, the administration is not relying on CARES money to make this position. We have budgeted, the position is already budgeted for on a seasonal basis. We are not relying on CARES money. We are proposing in the fiscal year 21 budget that we use fees to offset. Now, of course, I realize that that is a what if. Fees are our what if situation. But somebody has to implement the programming. The administration cannot handle putting everything in place at one time. So the first thing that this individual is tasked with is what does your programming look like next summer? What are the fees that you're planning to charge? What is the staff going to be required? What staff is going to be required to implement that programming? Please bundle it up and bring it to the town council after you've reviewed it with the park board. That is our intent. But as a team, we can't necessarily do that all on our own. An individual with an expertise in that field needs to be able to build all of that and put it together, and that's why we're suggesting this position become full-time year-round rather than just seasonal. Mr. Gibson?
Just briefly, so if it isn't COVID, and you said the fees wouldn't generate enough money, where is the money coming from? Because you're basically doubling or more what has already existed in the budget. So where is the money coming?
The money is coming from the fees generated by the program.
I thought you said before that might only be $1,000. That wouldn't cover.
Those are the existing fees that benefit parks and recreation. We would propose, if programming is implemented, we would propose new fees for those programs only. But there aren't any programs, and there aren't any fees associated with those non-existing programs. So when those programs are built, the Parks and Recreation Director will be responsible to figure out what do those programs cost, what kind of fees are needed to sustain those programs. They'll come back to the council and say, here's the program I want to establish, here's what it costs, can I please do it?
So just one more question, I guess I would have a council person ask that question. Right now it's a seasonal, part-time, at less salary. What does that cost? And what you're proposing is full-time at $17 an hour, which is more, I believe, than was paid before. What does that cost? That's more than this budget. Obvious.
Further public comment. Ms. Barker.
What was the resolution?
Can you speak to the podium, please?
What was the resolution that you spoke of on the COVID?
It was ordinance number 166. You're welcome. Further public comment? Further council comment? You're prepared to vote? Okay.
Are we voting on a part-time seasonal or a full-time?
You're voting on a full-time year-round at $17 an hour. Okay. Councilmember Michelson?
No.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Can you stop whispering in?
Please don't whisper in the back. Councilmember Holcomb?
No.
Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
Okay. I think that the reasons for establishing the position have been made very clear tonight. For those reasons, I vote in favor. With that, we'll move on to new business item C, discussion decision on creating seasonal park attendant positions and authorizing compensation. To this, as it's somewhat explained in your council packets, we're proposing to hire seasonal park attendant positions either on a part-time or full-time basis based on the availability of those individuals. We've advertised for these positions, and so to throw a wrench in this, we've advertised for these positions considerably, and we've been unsuccessful in getting anyone to fill them. We'd still like to have the option available so that we can continue to provide customer service and services in the state of COVID-19 that we are in. The expense of these positions is one where we are more or less relying on COVID funds to make up the difference. And if COVID funds do not come through, then we are suggesting, because these positions would be seasonal and may not be hired next year, that reserves, if needed, reserves or any general fund surplus, which we do anticipate a surplus, would be used to fund the positions. Again, they've not yet been hired because we've not been able to recruit someone to fill those positions. Their duties are outlined in the council communication and in the position description. A number of municipalities of various sizes will often hire these positions on a seasonal part-time. Usually they're part-time, between 20 to 30, sometimes up to 40 hours a week. And they do this on a regular basis, not just because of COVID-19, but because of COVID-19, we are suggesting that we implement these positions. And rather than just doing it solely under the authority of 166, we do want to bring the council in on the decision-making process for this and the previous position. Mr. Underwood, would you be willing to speak to the CARES funds and the communication you've received so far from the state and from the League of Cities and Towns in terms of the reliability of those funds coming through?
Roger, last week...
just yell at him.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Here we go.
Last week they sent out a...
that one died too.
Dead on the block. Okay, so they sent out an email to us about what's covered and not covered under COVID-19 for the state. And we've reviewed it over and over again. And tomorrow we'll submit the first tranche of our receipts and salaries and overtime connected with COVID-19. That's about 15,000 of what we're submitting right now and what their guidance is, and we'll see what we get back from that. And that will be within about 3 weeks, the check. There's four tranches that we'll do to the end of the year. And the state has set aside quite a bit of money for this endeavor.
Whack-a-mole.
And so, and especially these two positions themselves directly go with COVID-19. And so they shouldn't have any problem getting these funds. They're basically telling us these we will submit these funds, get them, get this money approved. Some of the other ones, yeah, we read into it, and we talked about it. I talked about the details of it, but any first responder, any public safety, salaries and overtime, not benefits, is covered. And so we'll know in 3 weeks when we get the check what they're talking about, if it's true. When I called them on, that the money's there and we're going to get that. That was very unexpected, especially for the first responders and for the public safety. And so that might be, you know, in 3 weeks we'll know. But these two for sure, for what they're doing, won't be funded until the end of this declaration for COVID-19 is over.
And with the CARES money specifically, there are three shots for us to, like Mr. Underwood described, there are three different opportunities for us to submit funding at this time. We realize that funding program is constantly evolving. And more funding may be made available, some funding may not be made available, deadlines may change, submittals may change, but as Mr. Underwood's described and we've stated, we're confident that these funds will come through in terms of CARES money because we're demonstrating clear compliance with the governor's directives. And so that's why we're bringing these forward for you tonight. No.
I'll make a motion to approve 11C.
Okay, is there a second?
No, second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Devlin to approve agenda item 11C. Council comments? Public comment.
Mayor, councilperson, this one more time. I guess, I don't know who the state is. Who is the state, Robert?
That's League of Cities and Towns.
That's not who's giving the grant.
No, they're facilitating our grant.
If you're that confident, then I would only, these are new FTEs, alternate you are, depending on COVID grant. What I would do is change the resolution, be my recommendation, as most government agencies would do, that this is contingent on getting the grant. Because there's a chance you won't get it. And again, we're back to, so you're going to hire some people, and you said this is through COVID money, and that's fine. Might be a good idea. But no government agency hires anybody, well, we're going to apply for a grant, and we'll use that money. You need to have the grant. I'm not here to argue again about the merit of it. I would just simply change the resolution contingent upon being awarded the grant money.
Sure.
This is not like a grant, a normal grant. So
I understand.
You don't apply for it first and then get the money. This is a reimbursement.
But you have to be approved.
You have to be approved. You have to be reimbursed. One of the things that they did when they made the stimulus, as you know, they're throwing out a lot of money. I'll give you an example of the airport. The airport got a $30,000 grant.
The examples I see by Governor Bullock.
This is the FAA. That organization got airports. So the airport got a $30,000 grant for COVID. Good for 3 years. Even used for salaries, and they got a lot, pretty good leeway on what we're going to use that money for. And then this other reimbursement grant comes out, and it tells us what's reimbursed. Tomorrow it's due for the first tranche. Obviously, we have some salaries in there. We have some public service salaries. We have some costs that went in and we did with the town. And we're going to turn that in and get reimbursed for that. 3 weeks, we should have the check. We can't say, give us the money and we're going to hire the person because we don't have an expense yet. It's reimbursed.
So again, all I'm saying, if you're that confident, then I would just change the language as your motion. That approve these positions if the money is approved. That's it. You haven't had the approval.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Art.
That's the same motion.
Way to go. I just have a question. I guess part of, you know, the description of what this position is going to be doing, it talks about to ensure the safety of the park users. Like, what does that mean? Like, to make sure people are distanced from one another? So if there are children playing at the park?
Primarily, it's in terms of sanitation, to make sure that things are wiped down, bathrooms are cleaned, the playground equipment is safe to use so that we can limit the spread of the virus should an outbreak occur in our community.
Okay, so we're not talking about making sure that the park users are maintaining compliance with the governor's social
not
distancing.
Not necessarily, no, we're not. We're not expecting them to
children
turn,
or
no,
any of that.
No.
And I guess just quickly to go back to the other programs, can that be something that the children would have imposed on them as well if there were programs? You know, I mean, eventually all this stuff is going to go away. It's got to. And we're not going to be doing this anymore. So, you know, if my child was to go through this program, and I don't know if that's something that you would be obligated to enforce, but to have all of this, you know, social distancing or make kids wear masks to participate or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, is that something that, you know, I don't want my child to go to the park and then feel like she has to be, you know, on edge because there's an attendant watching and making sure that she's not doing something unsafe.
That's not the intent of the positions. Okay. In terms of programming, we are implementing social distancing practices for groups that use the swimming pool. But if you're just going on the park on your own and you're going down and using the facility, no one's policing that you're not social distancing. That's part of the reason why we sanitize everything that we can. But we are obligated to as much as possible, just like in this meeting, we are obligated because of the portion of our funding comes from the state, and especially in these positions, to best as to our ability adhere to social distancing and other guidance that the state has given us.
So if we go to the swimming pool, then someone's going to be making sure we're keeping 6 feet from one another to swim?
Not necessarily. We'll reduce capacity so that the capacity isn't as dense. But we're not in the business of being policed, no.
Okay.
Any further public comment specifically on the positions? Okay, is there any further council comment?
I just need clarification because as I'm reading this CARES Act, it's for employees now, not employees you want to hire. If I'm getting that correct.
That's correct. That's what Mr. Underwood was trying to explain to us.
There are two lines on the thing. Employees with three protections. There's three lines. There's three different types of employees. One is we have now that we use for COVID, okay? One is that they call it repurposed. I call it repurposed. So you take them out and you say, now you're just going to do COVID. And then ones that you hire. And there's a line for new hirees after March 12th.
Okay, thank you.
So that's the line there for it.
And my understanding is that it's that these employees are being hired directly to take care of COVID mitigation and all that, right?
That is our intent, yes. Any further council comment? Okay, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb?
No.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
No.
Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
The mayor also votes aye in favor of the motion. With that, that concludes the business portion of our agenda, and I have a brief executive report for you to stay with our goal of moving along by 9 o'clock. Just a few things to apprise you of. I think that everyone is, for the most part, well, at least the council should be in the information we have pushed out to you throughout the COVID-19 emergency, how we've handled COVID-19. In many respects, the town was successful in implementing response to the health emergency as far back as March, prior to other communities doing so, and some communities modeled their efforts after Stevensville's. So I do appreciate the staff's dedication throughout the entire process that we've gone through. As well as the council's cooperation in handling that emergency as well. Of course, it's been stated it won't be around forever. It's obviously not going anywhere soon. So we continue to evolve and change as time needs to move on. With the Municipal Institute being canceled last month, the local government center released a online course labeled Fundamentals of Local Government, and that was geared for all levels of local government, or all elected officials and staff alike. Ms. Hoffman and I took advantage of the opportunity to take that class online, and while we haven't seen our certificates in the mail yet, we keep asking, we both successfully completed that course, and it was a six-unit course. It took about 6 weeks to complete. And it was a few hours a week worth of reviewing material in the Municipal Officials Handbook, being tested on that material, and then participating in online discussions with other participants in the course. In fact, they had so many participants, they'd split us up into, I think, two or three cohorts of the course. Each of those cohorts contained, I think, around 25 students. So there was a number of people who took it across the state. It was great information, wonderful to review that Municipal Officials Handbook and then to collaborate with other municipal officials throughout the state and kind of hear their thoughts, especially in the times we're living in now. There was some interesting discussions that came out of that. As we discussed on the last two agenda items, the CARES funding and application will be submitted tomorrow for funding under the CARES Act. We are prioritizing applications to CARES over FEMA at this time because CARES covers 100%, FEMA will cover 75%. So we are still evaluating both of those programs. As I stated earlier, a number of event permits have come forth, and we're processing those just as efficiently as we can, and being thorough in terms of making sure event holders are aware of the guidance from the governor's office. To be clear on one thing, the governor's office states that groups are limited to 50 people where physical distancing cannot be maintained, meaning that we still have to physically distance. It's still something that public health officials want us to do. But in settings like the park, we can obviously have more than 50 people in the park at a single time because we can maintain adequate distance from each other in that setting. And so you will see, in fact, we today adopted a concept from another community where we will do some painting of lines on fields and stuff to kind of help people visualize what social distancing in the parks looks like. We're obviously not going to be out writing tickets and citations for people who don't adhere to social distancing or adhere to the phase two restrictions, as we do hope we get into phase three soon. But we do want to help people understand, and if they need, you know, if they need an education or they need awareness of what restrictions are in place, we want to make sure that they're aware of those and that they have the opportunities to hear those. I realize that people have the right to not social distance if they don't want to, but understand there are other people in this community who do want to exercise their right to social distance. Everyone in this room has the right to come and publicly participate, but there are some of us in this room who don't have an option and have to be in this room. And I, for one, don't want to take something that I do believe is dangerous home to my family. And so I'm taking the precautions I can to keep them and myself safe. So keep that in mind that, yes, you don't have to socially distance, but there are some of us who do wish to socially distance, and we ask that you just respect that. So that's enough on COVID-19. Back to special event permits. We're processing those, and I think there's three or four kind of in the hopper that we're working through. Namely, the 4th of July fireworks, a couple of company picnics at the park. The Economic Support and Recovery Task Force continues to work through, you know, business support in our community. They recently met with the individuals who put together the Montana Main Street program application that was successfully awarded to the town. If you recall, I think that application came before you in December. And so the task force met with those folks and got some input and kind of reaffirmed the strategy in moving forward as to what the business support scene for Stevensville looks like. And that was a very helpful conversation. Looking down the road then, for some upcoming issues that you will see down the road from us, for us, at the next meeting you're going to see a task order come forward for HDR engineering for street improvements on 3rd Street. We are moving forward with the gas tax money we have in the bank. We have some preliminary conversations with HDR, and they're ready to bring forward an engineering task order to get the design done so that we can get some construction completed this late summer and into the fall. If you recall, I think 3rd Street is something we've been discussing replacing for 2.5 years. So we're ready to pull the trigger on that project and take advantage of the cash we've set aside and the low traffic volume we're currently experiencing with school out. The fire department's sublease will be brought forward to you at your next meeting, which is that the sublease to the lease you approved at our last council meeting. The subdivision review, the official review timeline started today for Burnt Fork Estates. We have 80 days by statute to process, 80 working days by statute to fully review and approve or approve with conditions or deny the subdivision application. That sunset then would be October 1st. So over the next couple few months, you're going to see us scheduling public hearings, planning and zoning meetings, and formal council meetings so that you can review the Burnt Fork Estates subdivision in its entirety. That application is available for review at Town Hall. We have those documents electronically, and we are working very quickly to try to get those all online so that you can see them sooner rather than later. So sometime next week, I think you can expect to see a page pop up on our website. We'll share it with you all so you have the insight into what the Burnt Fork Estates subdivision looks like. And then lastly, and it was mentioned earlier, a public hearing next week on Wednesday, correct? For Burnt Fork Place?
Correct.
So that public hearing is a requirement by the federal funding that goes into that project through HUD and the powers that be that do control that project. They are required to request a public hearing of the local government that has jurisdiction of the project, or where that project, the jurisdiction of their project lies within. Believe me, I didn't discourage the public hearing from the town council's perspective because I don't want to take public comment on it, but I didn't necessarily think it was beneficial for the town council to take public comment on a decision they don't have any control over. It's still a requirement of the feds for whatever reason, and so we've scheduled that public hearing. It was very clear in the public comment or in public notice that there is no decision being brought before you. It's more or less an opportunity for the public to come in, share their thoughts on the project. There will be representatives from the project there to hear that public comment, and that public comment will go into a record with the project wherever they file that project. So, to date, no official plans or permits have been pulled on that project. So if someone were to come to Town Hall and say, I want to review the plans, we don't have plans to show you other than some concept drawings. They haven't submitted for a permit, and so there's nothing there. In fact, we would probably refer you to PCI Engineering because they are designing the project, as I understand it. So just to give you some background on that public hearing, we designated it on its own night because we weren't sure how much public comment we would receive on the project. It has been rather controversial, and so I anticipate we'll be here for maybe an hour. So just keep that in mind. We're not bringing a decision before the council. This is more or less a facilitation to help that project satisfy the federal funding requirements. With that, look, I went over 9 o'clock, so I'll give you a chance to do council comments. Mr. Michelson.
I have sat back and watched as another email issue has come before us. These are the facts. On 5/17, I sent a correspondence letter from my personal email between Dave Larson and I to fellow member, council members Robin Holcomb and Dempsey Vick. I stated the words, as a FYI, I will be asking to waive the variance fee as I feel the Larsons have been treated unfairly. That was my so-called ex parte between Robin and I. On 5/21, Robin and I received an email from attorney Scott Owens stating that he had received word of a possible ex parte between Robin and I. Being shocked and confused, I called Scott and asked him where he got his information from. He stated he could not divulge that information to me. This is our town attorney, mind you. After Councilmember Devlin read the email that night, I emailed Scott and asked him where he got his information from. He stated that the information given to him was that it did not come from the town's email server. I helped write the town's email policy in 2018. I know the process well. If Robin and I were the only ones implicated in this, where's Dempsey Vick? He got the same email I sent to Robin. Why was Dempsey not accused of an ex parte? Dempsey even went with me on the job site to Dave Larson's to review it. Councilmember Devlin repeatedly states she did not hack into her town emails. She is correct to a point. Saying you didn't rob a bank, but standing on the sidewalk across the street with the stolen money doesn't make you innocent. Someone handed her the email. Dempsey has told me on numerous times he did not give the email in question to Jamie. What good is a $2,100 a month IT contract service when our emails are stolen? According to the town's email policy, a state law and state law, a crime has been committed if someone got in without proper protocol to Robin's email. I will be now moving forward to ask for a complete investigation be done to find out who got Robin's email and gave it to Ms. Devlin. If anyone thinks my email to Robin and Dempsey was collusion, feel free to fill out an information act form and go get Robin's emails, or I can give anyone the email I send. Please judge for yourself. And with that, I'd like to give the emails that I gave to Robin to Sue.
There you go, ma'am. That's an email request.
Does that conclude your comment, Mr. Robin?
That completes my comments. Thank you.
Ms. Holcomb.
Well, it looks like I have to defend myself again. So on my lunch hour, I listened to the audio. And when I said yes, that I did get an email from Mr. Michelson, but I did not reply, I was answering to the comment he made that we did get an email. That was it. And then I said no other emails. I never said that I didn't get any emails from Mr. Larson, just from Mr. Michelson. And I did say the reason I was voting the way I was is what I heard that night at the meeting. I clearly said that. And then I went on when I changed my vote. I never said to David Larson that if you pay for the permit, you should just build. That was never said. The emails that were read were between Mr. Michelson and Mr. Larson. I never made any backdoor promises to David Larson. Yes, I did get emails from David Larson, but it was because he wasn't getting an answer from the mayor. So I became this middle person, and every time I got an email from Mr. Larson, I emailed Mr. Dewey to see if he had responded to him. And then I would bring it to a council meeting, and during council comments, I would ask him again. But see, I was cut off when I was trying to say that. So do I think Mr. Larson was mistreated? Yes. But then when I did change my vote, which I wish I didn't, but you know, some people would have just found another reason, bad reason why I voted yes for it. And I did make a comment that I changed my vote because I didn't think my emails with David Larson were going to be an issue, and I didn't want to make an issue or a problem within the town. That's why I changed my vote. So, I mean, and I have all the emails here. It doesn't bother me. And again, I just want to say I never accused you of hacking. I don't know where that rumor started.
I didn't say that. Thank you. Didn't say that.
It was on Facebook. I don't know where that rumor started. So I just wanted to make that clear because I don't even know where that started. I never accused of anybody. So all I ever asked was how were my emails given to Ms. Devlin, because there is a protocol, and I did say that, and there is a protocol for all of this. And if the attorney would have just emailed me and said, hey, someone wants your email, just like when Brian West did, I said, I don't care, I have nothing to hide. But nothing was ever sent to me. I didn't even know until the night of that meeting. So I'm sorry if I did not lie. I just made a comment to what Mr. Michael said about, yes, we did have an email, and I just agreed. I just said, yes, I did get an email from Mr. Michelson, but I did not reply to it.
That's something to say.
Well, I do now.
Okay.
So, to clarify, I didn't get the emails from your email. They were in the string of emails that were off of Mr. Michelson's personal email. I didn't access those myself. I didn't access Robin's email. They didn't come from Robin's email. They came from Bob's personal email. So all the accusations of that are false. I said that last week. They continue to come out today. I didn't access anyone's emails. I didn't even access your personal email, Bob.
You can't.
I didn't do that.
You can't.
I don't know how. I didn't ask anybody to do that. So what form do I need to fill out? Can somebody tell me what form I need to fill out? Because I didn't do what you're saying I need a form to do. So if somebody can clear that up for me, that'd be really helpful.
Yes, I can clear that up.
Can I finish my council comment?
Oh, yes.
Oh, thanks. That's generous. When I go to work in the morning, I have a file, right? The things that come in throughout the day, they're in my file. My Stevensville office, my Hamilton office. Those emails were in my file. They were in a manila envelope in my file. I don't know where they came from. I don't know who gave me those emails. I don't know that. But what I do know is in politics, the friends you thought you had aren't your friends. I did not do anything illegal. I did not do anything wrong. The information could have been disclosed. I didn't have any information on the variance, Bob. I read what I had. Dempsey stated in that variance meeting that he met with the homeowner and you on that property. He disclosed that information. You did not disclose that you gave somebody permission to build. I did not do anything wrong. I didn't access emails incorrectly. I didn't access them at all. I didn't ask anybody to give them to me. It's that simple. There's nothing hard in what I'm saying. Don't do anything illegal and you won't get caught. It's that simple. That concludes my comments.
Mr. Vick.
Let Michelson talk.
He did. He got his
I'm done.
Chance. Okay. Yeah. Anything?
I guess since we're still having the meeting, I do want to address the public comments thing. The only reason behind 3 minutes, and I subsequently, after I state this, I will make a motion to extend that out to 5 minutes, is not to restrict what people have to say. It's more of to allow more people to have something to say, because there are people that show up here that there's times where someone has the same public comment that lasts for 30 minutes and they end up, someone else that wants to participate ends up getting up and leaving because they, you know, they got to cook supper or something. So with that, I want to make a motion.
We're
custom comments.
It's not. The last time I checked, the meeting hadn't adjourned yet.
It's an administrative act. We'll permit it.
I want to make a motion to
provided you have the votes.
I want to make a motion to extend that out to 5 minutes, and I want that to be for the next 4 meetings until we can draw up a resolution to provide a permanent set of rules as far as length. And Mr. Michelson, I do appreciate your laugh back there. And if you want to understand where this heel turn came from me, you can ask the person who told me in the middle of the street at the farmer's market to grow a set of balls.
With that, the motion on the floor is to extend the public comment, or
Excuse me, Mr. Dewey is speaking.
Please be respectful in the audience.
You've got to give us respect. I'm out of here. You guys have been mean.
No, Ms. Rodebaugh, please leave.
I don't care.
Mr. Vick's motion is to have public comment last 5 minutes per individual.
Bunch of crap.
For the next 4 meetings until a resolution come forward implementing policy. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Devlin to cap public comment at 5 minutes. Council discussion?
I have one question. Is that all public comment that you're referring to?
I want to just have it for right now, be during the public comment section where...
So under the public comment agenda item?
Correct.
Okay, that's clarified. Is there any further council comment? I'd entertain public comment on the public comment.
Oy vey.
Mr. Mayor, remember, I think it's a good idea, but I would be careful. When you get into the real budget, you might want to rethink that, because that gets a little complicated. But I understand what Mr. Vick is saying now, you know, with 5 minutes. I think that's fine. But when you get to your 25th budget meeting, there might be a lot more discussion.
25th?
Oh, I was like, 25th budget discussion? It's a special meeting. No.
And to clarify, I think Mr. Vick is only speaking in terms of the public comment agenda item. If you're commenting on a specific agenda item, there is no limit to 5 minutes. Is that correct? Okay. So this would just be under the public comment agenda item where it states public comment from citizens on items not on the agenda.
And that wouldn't include anything regarding public hearings?
Correct. If there's a specific item on the agenda and we call for public comment on that item, then there's no cap. Mr. Vick is just stating under general public comments, when we comment on anything under the Town of Stevensville's jurisdiction without being on the agenda, to limit that to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So during the public comment, it sounds like sometimes questions are okay, sometimes questions are not okay. So if we're, you know, uncertain, I guess, where else can we go to make additional public comments?
You can send us correspondence. If you have specific questions, you can email those to clerk@townofstevensville.com. And the clerk will make sure that those questions get to the appropriate authority. We can answer those right away. And if you'd like an explanation during a meeting, we can facilitate that.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. Any further public comment? Okay. Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. With that, board reports. The only board that's met recently is the airport board.
The only update that I have on that is the airport received a $30,000 grant from the FAA. My understanding of it is they can spend it all at one time or spend it over 3 years for operational expenses only. As of right now, the board is not looking to try to just come up with a position and hire. And based off of $30,000, which I highly would suggest not doing that. And then, as the mayor stated earlier, the our airport manager, Ms. Coleman Assad, had resigned yesterday. And hate to see her go, but glad to see Robert on board as an interim until we can find a permanent person to fill that spot.
Thank you. I know Mr. Something is trying to get a park board meeting up off the ground for the park board, and we'll work with the remaining boards. I know Planning and Zoning has a full docket up ahead of itself with the subdivision application, and we'll be looking probably to Tiff Ted for some insight into future projects. So with that, we'll return the meeting. It's almost 9:30. Have a good evening, everyone.